Do the next right thing to make your marriage sing.
All I ever wanted was to be in love with you. When your eyes met mine, I knew that this was really true. All the flowers of spring.
Hello, and welcome to The Music of Marriage
with Bob and
Evie. We have been here for a while at this unusual time of the day to, well, I guess it's, let's see, we're in Central Time, WAKM, 1 p.m. or 1:05 or 6 after the news at the top of the hour or something. And we have podcasts on themusicofmarriage.com if you can't listen to it all, or if you want to share, or if you want to re-listen, because we're so insightful, you know. You wouldn't want to miss anything. But we're here to do something, to go where man and woman rarely goes, and that is to actually talk about the topic of marriage and try to bring some encouragement to the situation. Because marriage is a situation that we find ourselves in. And how do we deal with it? How do we make it work? Does it have meaning? What meaning does it have? How does it become a positive force and a blessing in your life, which actually ties into what it was created for in the first place? It wasn't man's idea. So most of us have heard of the Bible, and we've heard of God and Christianity, and we know that the ideas of Christianity come from his word and from God, our creator. So his idea for marriage is what makes all the difference. And that's why today we're going to talk about how Christianity saves marriage. We've heard Jesus saves, right? But how Christianity saves marriage, and how it, our identity, who are we? And how does that affect our marriage, our identity as a husband or wife? Is really changed in a positive way when we know God's way, when we have that Christian perspective. Your purpose is changed, your identity, and then your sense of purpose. Your home and your family has a totally new and improved atmosphere. But we have to be prepared to examine and re-examine some of our most basic habits and beliefs about marriage and family life. And if we're not prepared to examine and critique, be critical about why do we keep running into this same ditch over and over, because anything is fixable, but it takes that effort, it takes that willingness, which is motivated by you want to preserve the marriage, the big picture.
And it takes re-examining marriage and family from a totally different perspective than we might think. For instance, if you're in a job and your boss has an agenda and a vision for his business, a plan, and you just decide, and you don't see that, you don't hear that vision, you don't see it, or you don't really care about it, you just think, well, I'm just here to do a job and I'll do it my way, and and the boss comes in and says, well, that's not the way I want you to do it this way, and but you keep finding ways to get your own way here and there and everywhere until you have to have a meeting with the boss, because the boss has a different plan than you do, and he knows how his business should operate and how it will become successful if he has cooperative employees. Same thing in a marriage. We have a God who has established rules, roles, and all kinds of other goodies for marriage and the family and how that works and how relationships work best. But if we want to get our own way and just don't think of re-examining it from God's perspective, we're going to end up being fired, I guess. But
firing each other is what we're going to do.
Yeah, we'll
see you later.
We'll fire each other, right?
So how Christianity saves marriage is kind of a cool concept, because you know, it has to do with our conscience as well, and we're going to talk about that. You know, our identity, who are we in the first place, and what's our purpose in the first place as a husband or wife, and then in our home, how does our home and family experience a totally new and improved atmosphere? So we want to be positive and encouraging, like, hey, here, look at this. You know, this can help this to be better. And so much today, we don't hear that. We hear, you know, negative or silence. We hear very little. Sadly, from churches, we hear very little. We hear, divorce care, but we don't see signs for divorce prevention. That, I think, we can prevent a lot of problems. And it all starts in our individual hearts and in our individual conscience and understanding. So as we study these things, we try to, we glean from, you know, what God has said and what other Christian authors have said, which is a huge help.
And because of what Evie just said, we generally are focused on problems more as a society, more than anything else. But the whole idea of problems in relationships should be in a context, in a much, much broader context of something very positive and encouraging. And that's how God makes marriage. That's why he assigned us roles in marriage. And that's why he gave us the ability to choose right and wrong based on his moral absolutes and his revealed will and his word. And that's where our conscience comes in. We're going to talk about that more in the second section. Right now, your identity as husband or wife is totally changed in a positive way.
If you have a Christian outlook.
Right.
Right? Because it's how Christianity saves marriage.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Your spouse is not just someone who's there for you. They have lasting value, because marriage is not just about your monetary happiness.
Momentary.
That's right. I'm sorry, I meant
but monetary as well. We know a lot of people who,
well, that's true too,
who marry for money, yeah. Or they won't stay married if the money's not there. They think if the money's not there, the marriage can't be there. And it's tough, trust me. It's tough. We know about that.
Evie didn't marry me for money, that's for sure.
Yeah, I did. You tricked me.
Monetary is momentary.
Yeah, sometimes it is. Very, very fleeting.
He tricked me. He had a yellow Carmen Ghia. And he had a yellow tennis outfit. He had the yellow terry cloth headband, you know, around the forehead and the back. He had the yellow terry cloth. Now, we're talking like a real nice soft canary daffodil yellow color. Yellow wristbands. And I have to credit his
that
mom.
That was in
his,
back then.
His mom was the shopper.
You married John McEnroe.
Yeah, John McEnroe.
He had, your tennis shoes weren't yellow, but the socks might have been. And the shorts and the shirt was. The whole thing was yellow. You had the yellow Carmen Ghia. It was right out of some movie. I don't know. I thought, wow, I guess I'll be in good shape with this guy.
Well, my dad got my mom because of his, 1940 Cadillac convertible.
Right, when he was 18 or something.
Yes. Yeah, so I figured, well, I could do the same, right?
Right, and she learned a little about him when they went on their first date, and then she was all about the perfect hair and the perfect, she was just classy lady. And so she got in the car and he had the roof down. It was a convertible Cadillac. And he wanted to drive it with the roof down, and he drove fast. And so much for her hair. Joe, my hair. And it never stopped. It was a lifelong.
That started her trend of wearing kerchiefs, or what do you call those things you wrap around?
Scarves.
Yeah, around your head.
But anyway, yeah, no, you, monetary happiness, momentary happiness, reasons we get married, right? Mm-hmm. And or reasons we think we want to stay married or not, the thing you have to realize is that everything that's really bad and rotten in your situation can be completely transformed around the corner. There's always something around the corner. And if you don't go around the corner, you'll miss that. And so your situation is rotten in some ways. It's tough. It's just beyond frustrating. And you can see a lot of reason to blame your spouse for it. Different times, right? That's what we naturally want to do. We want to blame and then throw rotten eggs and tomatoes and then say, I'm out of here. It's over. But we skipped the part of who our identity is, how God sees us. And he's like knocking at the door like, hello, hello, I have the answers for you, you know. And so we have to be willing to go through that hardcore, you know, stop and examine and then put your trust in God, like give it all to him. I remember times when I'd say, okay, I'm done wrestling with this, you know, or worrying about it. You command in your word, cast all your cares upon me, for I care for you. And isn't that a lovely little saying to embroider for the wall or on a mug? But in reality, you have this pile of cares, and it's not funny. Mm-hmm. And you've had it, right? You've had it. But did you give it to God yet? Did you do what he said? He says, cast them on me. So I wake up in the morning, and when there's situations in the family or whatever they are, I say, okay, here you are. You said cast them on you. Because I care for you. So I say, I don't care. Because, of course, you care. But the best way to care is by giving it to God, who cares and who can fix it. And then you sit there and you're in neutral gear. And then all of a sudden you start seeing things. Oh, my goodness, this happened. Oh, well, that's hopeful. Oh, that happened. That's hopeful. So there's a huge, big difference that it makes to have a Christian view of marriage and who we are in marriage.
And it's a position of responsibility, really, toward one another, toward the world, basically. So the bigger picture is way, way far beyond yourself. And if you're focused inward more, on your own happiness, your own feelings, you're going to miss that big picture because it's not what it's about.
Love is more than a feeling, as we've talked about a lot. It's more than your own love. In marriage, it is, should be part of that. So we don't want to, you want good feelings, but how you get the good feelings is to understand your status and your responsibility, that your identity is bigger than yourself. It's what you contribute to the well-being of your spouse, your family, and others. So how do you then take other parts of what God tells us, like don't be conceited, don't look at yourself as better than somebody else? How hard is that when somebody's like really blowing it all the time and you're smarter and you know the better way? How do you do that? How do you not look down on your spouse and put them down? Our identity is rooted in what God says. It's rooted in what he lays out as the optimal function of the home and family. And rooted is what we need to be, because nothing grows if the roots aren't well down there in the soil.
That's right. Yes.
Did you want to?
Well, no, that's a true point, and that's why marriage relationships should not be a static thing. They should not be coasting, basically. They should be growing on a regular basis. If you're not growing, you've got to really ask yourself, are you doing what you should be doing to grow? Because we all have a responsibility to change. As long as it may take, we still have that responsibility. And we also have a responsibility toward one another and how God established the roles, our basic roles. And unfortunately, in this day and age, we are All of those distinctions have been lost. There's a version in Colossians 2 that says, see to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the elemental forces of this world, rather than Christ. And that's exactly what is going on in this world. There's a lot of hollow and deceptive philosophies, false teachings, cultural trends, biases, changes of definition, the removal of distinctions, all kinds of distinctions, male, female, father, child, husband, wife, whatever distinctions are going on.
And trying to erase God, right?
Yeah.
As if that can happen, but...
And then there's the elemental forces of this world, which are spiritual forces that are the dark forces going on, trying to steer our conscience and our decision-making down a wrong path. So unless we're really anchored in God's Word and on Christ, those forces are going to be successful. And they're not out for any good reason. Their purposes are only destructive and divisive. So that leads us to roles.
Yeah, wrapping up this first segment on just getting into thinking about how do we think about saving our marriage, what could possibly save it from our concrete situations. We're going to talk in the next segment after the song about our conscience, which is what Bob was just saying, is trying to be erased. Our humanness, our humanity as God created us, includes our conscience and our soul, which can never be erased. Well, you know, who knows with the laboratory work they're doing today.
AI.
They're doing AI. trying a lot of ways. But we have to be aware of this. And understanding our identity, just say, for example, as husband, we were just thinking of a few basic things. What is your responsibility? It's to establish and cultivate the divine order in the home, which we'll talk about more later. A Christ-like servant heart on the part of the husband is critical. The God-given responsibility the husband has for love and unity and peace in the home. You know, when Andy Griffith saw that everyone was at each other at breakfast table in the morning, he realized it was because they had a guest who was kind of rude and kept waking them up, and they weren't getting any sleep after a few nights of this guest. But he pressed the reset button. He recognized that. And it reset everything to start over. That's one practical thing that we need to do, and that the buck kind of stops with a husband in God's view in terms of love in the home and people getting along and the overall health of the home. Just like the president of a company, you would hold responsible. He's the one you will call if you're going into his business and you keep encountering these problems. And then as far as the wife's role and identity, and there's so much to be said about that, but, you know, God has said, okay, the husband's responsible to love and care for his wife as himself. Well, you can't get much better than that as a wife if your husband actually is doing that. And, of course, he's not going to do that perfectly. But neither are you going to want to submit, which doesn't mean you have no value. In fact, Christianity is what gives value and recognizes the value of a woman and her dignity and understands that she's a fellow heir of eternal life. God tells us that. So he holds women in just as high esteem as men, and using this false, this deceptive idea that's put out there that, oh, you know, women need rights. They have all the rights that they need from God already. And so it's not that women don't have rights. It's that the collective society and conscience and is not submitting to what God says, which obviously gives her rights and gives her dignity. And that's why God says to treat her better than yourself and to sacrifice your life for her. So those are just a few ideas about how Christianity saves marriage. And the feeling part, again, which we talk about, Christ was the example. Not my will, but thine be done. He went to the cross. So as the husband is to lay down his life for his wife like Christ did for the church, it wasn't fun, right? It wasn't fun to be unfairly mocked and antagonized and whipped and beaten and crucified. But he went through that for the higher purpose, which is if we keep that in mind, we will have no problem applying to our circumstances, you know, these roles, which goes, again, beyond our feelings. It's not my will as a wife, but God's will be done. It's not Bob's will as a husband, but if he says, thy will be done. And if as a couple together you say, you know what, it's not about me, myself, and I, or you, yourself, and you. It's about if we carry out God's will, then our feelings will change. Everything will change for the better.
And I like the equality thing you mentioned, because even though roles of husbands and wives are different in the family, because in God's heart we all are equally valuable, there's no sense of superiority in the leadership role of the husband or servility in the submissive role of the wife. Both roles are complementary and mandated for completion and fulfillment of marriage and the family. And you know, these roles were given to us to achieve equilibrium in the home. There's no sense of the stereotypical viewpoints we see in the roles that are posited out in society that make people want to steer away from the whole subject. And when's the last time you ever heard a sermon on the roles of the husband and wife? It's not popular, but it's absolutely essential. And I looked up the definition of equilibrium, because it's an important thing. It's a state of rest or balance due to the equal action of opposing forces, which is very interesting. So two different...
Sounds like a definition of marriage.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's two different forces.
At times.
But the interesting part is that you can create rest and balance with two opposing forces, actually. And that's fascinating. So relationship roles never work against each other. They're God-given distinctions working in a harmonious way.
What does Boston's More Than a Feeling have to do with it? But this song, you know, he realizes that love is more than a feeling. It's kind of simplistic, but the way he sings it, it's definitely heartfelt, and Boston is good. I know they're not the country style that you usually play here, Daryl, right?
This is a treat.
We have a very different collection of songs today, but anyway, I guess this girl walked away from him, and then he's contemplating and singing about how love is more than a feeling. So anyway, hope you like the song by Boston.
I close my eyes and I sleep.
We're back with the music of marriage, talking about love being more than a feeling and
how Christianity saves marriage.
Hey, we did that, and that should be a commercial. But no. Anyway, it's important stuff. So, your purpose as husband or wife is changed in a totally positive way through fine-tuning your conscience. We addressed the whole idea of the conscience earlier, and I don't think we give a whole lot of thought to that. In fact, I don't really hear much about that anymore. You know, way back in elementary school, I remember hearing something about, well, you have a conscience, you know, and the devil's on one side of your shoulder and God is on the other side, and they're both whispering in your ear. Well, there's some truth to that, but it goes a lot deeper. Just like a musical instrument, you have to fine-tune your conscience because it has great power to improve your feelings about your marriage and your relationships, as well as your own personal life and the way you make decisions day in and day out.
When do we have time to think about fine-tuning our conscience? Like when we're riding, yeah, sitting and waiting at McDonald's at the drive-thru or something? And how do we even begin to... What is conscience?
I did get a
definition up.
Do you have a definition?
You go ahead. Okay. I've got to grab it off my phone.
Well, it should be a constant thing, actually, because you're constantly making decisions. Some decisions aren't always based on right and wrong, but a lot of them are. And so we're talking about fine-tuning this, but in R.C. Sproul's book, Essential Truths of the Christian Faith, which is a fabulous book that really summarizes every doctrine in the Bible in a page and a half for each doctrine. Wonderful book. You can learn a ton. You can get a seminary education just reading through that book.
What is the book again? R.C. Sproul?
Yes, Essential Truths of the Christian Faith.
And again, educating ourselves, reading. So Sunday afternoon, it's quiet in our house. Bob likes to take a nap. I like to be in the living room where I'm like, it's my space. I don't have to talk to, you know, I can have some.
That's the only time I get to take a nap. So I feel good about it.
No,
my
mean,
conscience lets
that's
me good.
Good. It's a day of rest.
Let's be alone on
it's
that
one.
It's
supposed to be a day of rest. So I am sitting there. What do I do? And I'm thinking, no, we do have this radio show. I need to learn. There's a lot to learn. So I pick up this book and or that book. And, you know, even reading just a few paragraphs of a book, if you're not a big student and reader, you don't have to be that kind of person. But you can gain so much just by opening up a good book that people who've spent hours studying have brought together all this material for you.
A lifetime study.
You know, they spend hours and hours, and you just sit there reading it in a few seconds, and it can change your life. So that's part of fine-tuning, like my conscience, is reading from good writers like R.C. Sproul. But this idea of conscience he was talking about, I just was curious what the dictionary says, because they often don't have a complete, well, they don't really include a biblical concept, but they do say it's the inner sense of what is right or wrong in one's conduct or motives, which impels one, you or me, toward right action. The complex of ethical and moral principles that controls or inhibits the actions or thoughts of an individual. How much are we hearing about that today? Is it even in the church? Is there so much permissiveness? There's so much, be like the crowd, you know? God is love. He loves everybody. Welcomes with open arms. So are we like erasing distinctions? Are we erasing right and wrong? Are we erasing those subtleties that are creating seismic earthquakes in our relationships? These subtle things? Because if nothing's right or wrong, then why do I care if it bothers you that I'm always late, or that I rung up the credit card, or that I laze around and don't help, or that I, whatever the things are, So you see, there's a real big connection between our conscience being tuned properly and us doing the work of, okay, you know, we today are the comfort culture, right? We've got a refrigerator full of food, got the beer in our cup holder. You know, they make the couches now like you could be buried in one. You know, you've got everything. You've got the little thing with your cup holders and the recliner and the massager built in. Got your TV in front of you, your remote. What else could you need in life? Why think? Just sit back and be programmed by what's on that screen. Be programmed.
And you don't know how remote you are from your wife's heart. Sometimes,
Or what does God want to make of you? I mean, there's an awful lot that we can do that's productive. And I know my own tendency to just serve, you know, be lazy. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, you need those times as well. But
you must have a fine-tuned conscience, because I don't view you as a lazy person. You're a doer, a worker, a giver, and it just never stops. Puts me to shame, actually.
Well, you have to keep asking yourself, you know, am I being, and I guess it's because I was raised, you know, that we are living for the glory of God, to glorify Him and enjoy Him too, not just to be, you know, able to say, oh, I did all these great things, you know, but that because God is a real person, and He wants communion with us, as our spouse wants communion with us, we should always be taking these things into consideration. And that's why a lot of marriages and relationships fall into trouble, because we're going our merry way, grabbing as much for ourselves in life as we can. And I know my conscience bothers me if, oh my goodness, you know, my husband's allergies are really bad and I haven't been vacuuming very well lately, or, you know, there's that pile of this and that I haven't attended to. And we all have this, you know. We don't need to be the perfect picture of in every respect. But challenging our conscience and understanding that we have one, and it's meant to be used to keep us, not only keep us out of trouble, but to create positivity.
Right. I think it's interesting, too, that the dictionary definition acknowledges that we have an inner sense of right and wrong. And where does that come from? I think collectively, we as a people, a race, a culture, no matter what our differences are, have a general sense of right and wrong. I remember back on 9/11 that the entire world was outraged at that. Why is that? What was wrong about it? You know, just a few guys thought that they had a right to kill thousands of people and destroy a way of life. And what's wrong with that, you know? Well, there's a lot wrong with that, obviously. But and that's where we've got to really appreciate the moral absolutes God has created for us to live by. Because if we take them lightly, if we brush them aside, if we just think, well, I can do what I want to do, that's when we get in trouble.
You'll remember that the churches were overflowing for a few weeks after 9/11.
Yeah.
Conscience was awakened. I'm scared. This is scary. Where do we go when like, oh boy, you know, what is going on? And am I targeted next? Or was one of my loved ones in that situation?
Everyone's conscience told them that this was wrong, and
they needed God.
Right. But getting back to what R.C. Sproul said, he made a very interesting comment about Jiminy Cricket, which is doesn't sound like a theologian, but it was brilliant, which does remind me that I think that's about the only place I've heard about the conscience was in the movie Pinocchio. And Jiminy Cricket has this little fun little song that we're going to play for you next. But Jiminy Cricket said that always let your conscience be your guide. And R.C. Sproul said that's good advice if our conscience is informed and ruled by the Word of God. But if our conscience has been seared and hardened by repeated sin, the Jiminy Cricket theology is dangerous because our conscience is now deformed and needing straightened out, and it's going to lead to disastrous consequences. So these laws are written on our heart, on the human heart, from conception. The human conscience is informed by the revelation of God's law. And that's where we get it. That's where we get the sense of right and wrong. And so fine-tuning that, it's, and I don't want to be glib talking about the conscience, you know, being the right and wrong thing, because I think all of us tend to not listen to that still small voice that is telling us something we know to be right. Right?
Eating that extra cookie, or yeah, eating all the cookies, what's that going to do? You know, am I going to regret that? Is that going to be good for my health? Is it going to keep me awake and then I'm crabby and then I'm good for nothing the next day? All those little things are matters of the conscience.
But it's a very practical topic, because Sproul also mentioned two things, and that is, one, there's two basic elements included in the whole concept of the conscience, and that is, one is an inner awareness of right and wrong, as we said, and two is a mental ability to apply laws and norms and rules to concrete situations. And I think that's where it really, the rubber meets the road.
A mental ability. Do you have, do I have a mental ability? Does our nation, do our leaders in our country, globally, whatever, do our leaders have the mental ability to apply laws and norms and rules to concrete situations? And if so, like he says, just because Jiminy Cricket said, let your conscience be your guide, your conscience has to be aligned with the right guide in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, a ruler is not longer for you than it is for me. The 12 inches is the same for everybody, and that'll never change. And that's what's built into our conscience.
The biblical principle of losing your conscience to God's moral law is that if you are repeatedly in sin and disregarding God's law, he's going to allow your conscience to become so dull you can't hear him anymore, so that you will reap sow what you sow, right? And you'll see the consequences of your own actions, unguided by God's conscience. And so it's a searing process God does, basically like branding all of us. I mean, and the best of people can start getting a dull edge on that conscience because of just turning a dull ear to it, a deaf ear to it.
And ignoring and not dealing with habits and patterns that we have. These are concrete situations. Oh, I'm always late, so we're always arguing on the way to, and somebody's late, and then I'm going through red lights, and then everybody's upset how I drive. Or maybe it's, you know, I really didn't, you know, I watched that TV show too long, and I didn't get my this done in time, or I ate too much of this, and now I have this problem. We all know how we have these things, you know, that we do, even as kids, you know, I should have done my homework, now, whatever. But it's when we apply these moral laws to those situations and ask God to help us. It's what I was saying earlier. Say, I'm a mess. I keep doing the same dumb thing over and over. Like, hello, I will not eat chocolate before bed anymore. I promise. And then next thing you know, next day, maybe tonight I'll sleep through the night.
Or if your conscience is telling you not to say something that you want to say to your husband or wife because you know that they're going to react negatively to it, and it's going to start an argument or something worse, and you just say it anyway because you just want to you want to get back at him or her for whatever reason, or just put them in their place, or put you in a higher position than them, whatever the reason may be, you ignore your conscience there, and it has practical implications that unravel in your relationship.
For better or worse, because you can choose to say, I think I won't say that. I'll keep the peace here, right? Which is...
And we shouldn't go any further without hearing Jiminy Cricket sing, "Always Let Your Conscience Be Your Guide."
That's it. Come on now. Let's sing it. When you get in trouble and you don't know right from wrong, give a little whistle. Give a little whistle. When you meet temptation and the urge is very strong, give a little whistle. Give a little whistle. Not just a little squeak. Pucker up and blow. And if your whistle's weak, yell,
Jiminy Cricket!
Right! Take the straight and narrow path, and if you start to slide, give a little whistle. Give a little whistle. And always let your conscience be your guide. And if you start to slide, give a little whistle.
Yoo-hoo!
Give a little whistle.
Woo-hoo!
And always let your conscience be your guide.
And always let your conscience be your guide.
Come out!
Okay. I don't know what happened at the end of that song. I hope Pinocchio's okay. But anyway, that corny little cute thing that we heard... Always let your conscience be your guide. Okay, so I hope that never leaves our heads and drives us nuts, because we don't do that very much, do we? We let our gut be our guide. We let our mood be our guide.
Is that why so many people back in the day, you know, when things were kind of normal and right and wrong was established, whistled while they worked? They just had a happy-go-lucky...
Well, you know, at least it was presented to us in the entertainment world, in the collective, in society. There was kind of a collective, you know, people were churchgoers more. They were valuing the Ten Commandments. They wanted their children to be guided by, and not your own conscience, remember. Your conscience comes from God, who created the guide. So, Jiminy Cricket is fine as long as our conscience knows what it's to adhere to. And so we have to be discerning what's right, what's wrong, what's truth, what's a lie, what's deception. And there's so much fakery and so much deception today that it leaves a really wonderful opportunity for us to just bring in all this positive, good stuff that comes from, hey, wait a minute, we're way out here in left field. Let's get let's get on home plate and let's start knocking it out of the park and having positive and peaceful lives, and not pretend that we can have peace and happiness when we go off the rails. Like a train off the rails can have a lot of peace and happiness romping through the fields until it crashes in a million pieces. So, hey, by the way, themusicofmarriage.com is our website, and we have a book called How to Make Your Marriage Sing, Biblical Principles to Keep the Music Playing. And we have podcasts there that you can listen and share, and some original music of ours. So to wrap up today about how Christianity saves marriage, it tells you what your identity is as a person, and that helps you to fulfill your role as a husband and as a wife and as a citizen of your community, of your church. You know, and you know, if you botched it, which we all have, we all know how we have, don't focus on that. Focus on the being, what we can have and what we can do and be, and don't think, oh, it's over for me, or I'm a failure, I have this, you know, record. Because remember, that's why Christ sacrificed and suffered what he did, so that we could take on his righteousness and be looked at favorably by him if we accept that, what he did for us. And then we can apply that to our practical everyday situations in our homes and create an atmosphere in our home and family life that's new and improved.
And teach our children how to apply God's laws and norms and principles to concrete situations. So that's very important. And believe it or not, the secret of family life is to cultivate the family's relationship with Jesus Christ. And Larry, if you want a real basic book on marriage and Christianity, Larry Christensen's book, Larry Christensen has a book called The Christian Family, and it's just very fundamental, real, very basic, and pretty exhaustive in terms of what it means to have a Christian family.
Right, because he says that the secret of family life, like Bob said, is cultivating a relationship with Christ. Because you don't need to use that secret. You're free to choose. Jesus says, you know, I would like you to choose me. Things will work out better. I'd rather that, because the other way isn't going to end up so well, usually, mm-hmm. or eternally. mm-hmm. And there's no phase of family life that's left outside of this relationship. There's no problem a family faces which does not find its solution within the scope of that objective. If your objective is to do what pleases God and to find out and to align yourself with, okay, what does he say? What am I supposed to be? Oh, whoops. Maybe I better work harder on that. I better ask for his help to stop doing that. Then I'll have more peace. When we work in our family life and marriage and let our spouse know that that's our guide, then everything is like so much more relaxed and there's hope brought in. So in wrapping up today, we know that, you know, the two things of divine order in the home that we have to establish, and then practicing the presence of Jesus, like having a guest in the house, the unseen guest. Even though we can't see him, we can talk with him, and we know that we will see miracles happen. And I'm telling you, I don't really believe we're praying unless we're praying for something that we believe is impossible. Mm-hmm. I don't believe we have faith until we're praying for a mountain to be moved. And when we do, in faith, you will be surprised and you will be watching and you'll say, oh, wow, I prayed and look what's happening. And then we will more and more get addicted to that awesome, wonderful hope and power, and the change that it brings is so positive.
Yeah, and the home should be a picture of God's design for the family and a showcase for the blessings that come as a result. And so are we as husbands, wives, and families, are thankful, living in thankfulness, content with our situation, committed to not only changing ourselves, but reaching out to a lost world and modeling Christian life to a lost world, and creating an atmosphere in which Jesus feels at home in our home. And so what's the challenge there? This starts in your own heart, whatever your situation is, and then it can go out from there.
It's the opposite of self-centered living, really.
Yeah.
And we're glad that you listened today, and thank you, Daryl, again, for patiently keeping the plugs in the right places. And just be thankful and count your blessings, despite being weary, potentially. Carry on, and God will give you the joy of living your life with him. And, you know, you can start anywhere. He's always there. He never changes. He never moves. Unlike us, he never changes, mm-hmm. and that's a good thing. So this song by Eric Bibb is from his album Troubadour Live, called Thanks for the Joy. Mm-hmm. Have a good day.
Yes. See you next week.
If I'd known what I know today, 10 years ago, wonder where I'd be on my journey now. Well, I'm here, and this
this evening, and I know what I'm here to do. Give thanks for the joy of living my life with you. Woke up this morning feeling mighty bad. When I searched my heart, I found the reason why. Instead of thinking about where I am, I was thinking about where I've been. Forgot to give thanks for the joy of living my life with you. So
I'm here
to
tell you,
when my heart's so heavy
about to break in two.
One thing every time brings back my smile. I
start to count
my blessings.
My blessings.
That's all I need to do. Give thanks for the joy of living my life with you. Some days I get weary,
tired of keeping on, keeping on.
Then I look around and I see my work's not done. And I know I'm here this evening. I know what I'm here to do.
Give thanks for the joy of living my life with you.
Every day I give
thanks for the joy of living my life with you.
In every way I give
thanks for the joy of